I'm not sure who's going to win. Maybe we have to take a vote. We'll just start off. We'll just get a feel for the what everyone thinks. Who thinks Brother Sudama's hat is the best hat? Yeah. Okay. There's even votes coming out from the back over there. Brother Sudama, where did you get that wonderful hat? You made it. Wow. Now we could start a big business over here. I mean, Jimmy, you'd look good in one of those hats, I think, especially when you walk into the office. With a flower in. We're on to something now, I think. Okay. Since you won already, and you have to ask them what to do for your prize, okay? If you want, you can go ahead. So if you want to sit, you're welcome to sit. Okay. Oh, my God. Jinandasya, Jinajanas, Lakaya, Sakshis, Meditan, Tana, Tasmai, Sri Yudhavainamah, Sri Chaitanya, Manavistam, Stapitam, Jaina, Bhutale, Sayam, Rupinamayam, Vedati, Sampi. Once the in this part of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're hearing about the different levels that are possible to have a relationship with the Absolute Truth, with God, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is actually possible in intimacy of relationship? And then later on in the chapter, process of achieving it will be described. And also, of course, throughout Chaitanya Charitamrita, these are the topics commonly known as Sambandhagyan. What is the relationship that we have with the Supreme Absolute Truth, with Krishna? And then what is the process of achieving that? Abhideya Tattva, and then Prayojana Tattva. What is the most intimate of relationships that's possible? To what extent can we have a relationship with the Supreme Lord? After all, we are tiny and we are insignificant. If I ask everyone to raise the hand, if you're tiny and insignificant, everyone will raise the hand, of course, and look around to see if there's anyone not raising their hand. But who during the day thinks of themselves as tiny and insignificant? We tend to think of ourselves as quite central and quite significant. But that's called illusion or Maya. But how can the tiny, what is the extent of the relationship, the tiny and insignificant jiva soul? What is the extent of the relationship of intimacy can he have with the all-powerful Absolute Truth, who is a person? It's like if someone is an insignificant beggar, how much of a relationship can he expect to have with the king? How much can he demand? How much can he feel entitled to? So in a kingdom, every living entity has a relationship with the monarch, with the ruler, actually. And the ruler thinks of every living entity as his praja, or part of his family, practically speaking. That's what real rulership is. When there is a natural, intimate relationship between all the creatures who inhabit the kingdom and the king, he feels he feels that they are under my protection, and therefore it is my duty to protect them. That is the spirit of a king, a true king. And then on the other hand, the citizens, they feel protected and they feel so grateful because in this world, we say that there are four propensities that every living entity has, who's conditioned in this world, who's controlled in this world. It is eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And out of these four, the deepest one is defending. Because of, why does one defend? Because of fear. So that's what everyone is afraid of. Everyone is afraid of fear. And why is fear, why are we afraid of it? Because we are in a very precarious position. It's natural, it's accurate, it's appropriate that we feel fearful. Because here we are, making believe that we're independent of Krishna and we're deprived in that sense of Krishna's protection. In this, he's not in our consciousness as the protector. So naturally we feel fearful. We're always trying to defend against so many things on the physical level, on the mental level, on every level, intellectual level, even the most intelligent people. There's always someone more intelligent or someone more young who is more capable, and you want to hold on to your position, because that position is your identity. And if we, it's an illusory identity, but it's all we have. And we're frightened of losing that, because if we don't, it's such an interesting point actually, that, we have so many identities that are illusion. They're not really us. And what happens if they're overlays? Sanskrit, the word is upadhi. They're overlays on our consciousness, overlays on who we think we are, but they're not actually us. So just like when I was young, I used to think I could run and run and run and run. And I used to think I was very, and I was proud of that. And I could run so far and for hours and hours without getting tired practically. And that was an identity I had. But now that identity, where is it? It's gone. That one who can run can just barely walk some of the time. So if I removed all the identities that aren't really me, the ones that are temporarily me, what would be left? I don't know. I'd feel I don't exist. So therefore, that's very frightening. So just everyone take a minute and just think to yourself of all the identities that you have. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand and explain what they are. All the things that you think you are, but aren't really, really you. They're just overlays on who you are, on who you really are. And they're, and we know that they're not really us because they change. And when the body dies, we have to leave them behind. All those things relating to the temporary us. So take a minute and just think of who you think you are that you're actually not. All the identities that you, self-identities that you have, but actually aren't you. See if you can count them. See how many you come up with. The one who coughs. It's another one, upadhi. One has a sore neck, it's two. So one is a good manager, that's three. One is a Punjabi, that's four. We're going to really put you through it now. Cricket player, five. Father, husband, employee, eight. Son. So when we remove all these false identities, what is the energy, the consciousness behind all those identities? Is there anything even left when we remove all the false identities? That's what life is meant to to find out. And that's the question of who actually am I? When I remove all the identities related to my material mind and material body, material intelligence, what is left? Who am I? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the whole Vedic system beginning in the Bhagavad Gita tells that we are eternal. And our symptom is consciousness. But what is the nature of that eternal? Mahaprabhu will later say, Jivera Srupai Krishna Nityadas. We are Krishna's. And not only we belong to Krishna, we are servants, just like the citizens of the kingdom, due to their relationship with the king. If the king is proper and fair, feeling properly protected, they naturally feel so grateful and want to do something in reciprocation. In Vedic times, as Prabhupada explains in the first canto, one of his purports, there was no graduated income tax. There was just straight, everyone would give one quarter of their crops to the king. Could you imagine a society where people were in hiding the amount of profits they had so that they wouldn't give one quarter? They would feel this is an exchange for the protection I'm getting. And due to the king's sacrifices, the weather was in a certain way. This is what we understand. It was suitable. And the king would protect them from thieves and rogues, etc. And no one would dare harm an innocent creature. And Prabhupada told that even 50 years ago, which now it's 100 years ago, when after he said that in Kashmir, there was a king who was so strong that if someone dropped their wallet, or of course they didn't have mobile phones or wallets probably in those days, but if someone dropped something valuable, no one would touch it. Even because you can use the excuse, oh, I'm just picking it up to give it back to the owner. No. The king was so strong that no one was allowed under very heavy threat. And the king has to be strong in that way. It's punishment. You touch something that's not yours, punishment. And no one, and the king was fair. And you could, and that same thing that you left there, you come back in 7 hours, 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours, day, 2 days, it would still be there. Even to this day, Singapore is a little like, it used to be somewhat like that. No one, people are frightened to steal and things like that. And nowadays, not only you can't even leave something in the street, if you even have it in your pocket, it's dangerous. Or if you have some information on your mobile phone, they'll sneak into your mobile phone and pull it out. So a different situation. So what is the nature of the soul of who I am? Who am I when all these upadis are removed? Such an interesting question. Usually we so much identify with the upadis, with the overlays, with our mind's thoughts, that we don't even recognize that there's something deeper or beyond or underneath all these things. And even beyond the fact that we're conscious. What's going on back there? Huh? Coloring. Coloring. Maybe we can close that little door. Maybe that'll help. So what Mount Prabhu was teaching here in his interaction with Ramananda Roy is the different levels that the soul can achieve. Not only achieve in the sense of it's outside of him, you have to achieve something that you don't have, but almost uncover also a combination between the two. Uncover who we really are. Uncover who we really are. The different levels that one can actually be in, and they're graduated. So up to this point, what we read last week, Mahaprabhu Ramananda Roy said, ecstatic love, prema bhakti sarva sadhyasar, that the goal is prema bhakti, love, ecstatic love for Krishna, not quite like the love of this world, but ecstatic love. On the platform of the soul, not on the platform of the body. This sarva-sadhyasara, this is the essence of perfection. Now, and all the practices in spiritual life and in religious life and Krishna consciousness, they are meant to bring us to that platform of ecstasy. Ecstasy will be in relationship, because we have a relationship with the Supreme Lord. So ecstasy in relationship, in our relationship to him, that is naturally ecstatic if that's awakened. So Prabhupada explains sadhana bhakti, and bring, if to perform devotional service in such a way, bhakti in such a way, to perform our sadhana or practice in such a way that it will bring forth our natural relationship with the Supreme Lord. How to do that is what's called technically abhideya tattva, or the process of performing devotional service, how to perform it correctly in such a way that it brings the result, this result. Now he's going to explain sepsis. Then he says, as long as there is hunger and thirst within the stomach, varieties of food and drink make one feel very happy. Have you had that experience when you're very hungry? Food or drink, or when you're thirsty, the food or the drink tastes better. So where is the actual taste in? Is it in the food, or is it in you? When it depends on you, how you're experiencing the food, and of course it depends on the quality of the food, what you're going. So there's this combination of you and the food. So the the words here are, as long as there is hunger and thirst within the stomach, varieties of food and drink make one feel very happy. Similarly, when the Lord is worshipped with pure love, the various activities performed in the course of that worship awaken transcendental bliss in the heart of the devotee. So what is the meaning of that? I'll read it again. And ask the same question. See if you can capture the essence of the meaning of this. As long as there is hunger and thirst within the stomach, that's clear. Varieties of food and drink make one feel very happy. Hunger, thirst, and the taste of those, of the food and drink when one has hunger and thirst. Similarly, so the comparison is being made. When the Lord is worshipped with pure love, so that's the hunger and thirst. The various activities performed in the course of that worship awaken transcendental bliss in the heart of the devotee. So when there is pure love, then the activities, the bhakti, the sadhana bhakti or any bhakti performed in relationship to the Supreme Lord, offered to him that brings transcendental bliss in the heart of the devotee. So who can say that in the negative? The vyatirik, the negation of that.
The mere mere to be empty of person himself, sitting.
You can't be empty of yourself, because then who would be emptying?
I mean, false self.
False self, yeah. Yes, but one step more than that. Not only do you have to be empty of that, you have to have love too. It's like you can do something unselfishly, or you're empty of selfishness, but it's a different experience if you do something unselfishly for someone, and you do something unselfishly for someone you love. Just if it's some ordinary person, there's a different experience.
Same for yourself, huh?
Yes, but also the positive of love for that person. Follow?
Is that because the soul has innate quality of love?
But the innate quality of love has an object. You can't have love without an object. There has to be a beloved. And the natural beloved for the love of every soul is the Supreme Person, the Supreme Lord. So that's a new concept for people of this world generally, that the object of love is a person, a supreme person. So the fact that the supreme can be a person or is a person is hard for the material mind to digest, in the sense that we think of personhood as a limitation. But it isn't. It's a prerequisite. Can you have, because if you think of a person, like here is Barizan Das sitting in the chair. So if I'm sitting here and I have a particular form, and my form means a limitation, and if I'm here, if I have 5 fingers and they're all this length, I don't have 10 fingers, I don't have 100 fingers, and my fingers aren't everywhere, and my body isn't everywhere, here I am. So one would think that form means limitation. Follow me? But, when you have a transcendental, unlimited form, there is no limitation, even though there isn't that form. There's a form, but without limitation. Now, how is that possible? The material mind can't conceive of that. But the Lord and his energy is almost the closest thing we can get, is that the sun and its sun rays and its energies of heat and light, even though the sun is localized in one place, its energies of heat and light are everywhere. Something like that. So that's a new concept for most people, especially because in this world, the propaganda is so impersonal. Even if you think of the Supreme, what do you think of? What can you think of? Old man with a beard sitting on a throne or something like that. How old is the old man with the beard sitting on the throne? Like 90 or something like that. But he's eternal, so he should be a lot older than 90. And his beard would be a lot longer than it usually is when we envision that. And his skin would be a lot more wrinkled if it's on the material level. So Krishna has a body that doesn't age. So if you could, in that mental Judeo-Christian picture there is of God in their mind, very much coming from Michelangelo and the Sistine Chapel or something like that, this picture of God touching man and giving him life. God is an old man. But so if he's not unlimitedly old in the picture, he's like 75, maybe 85, maybe 90 at most. But if he's a transcendental, unlimitedly powerful Supreme Person, and if he could stop aging, well, where would you stop aging? 16 or 95? So he stops whenever he wants to stop. This is transcendental body. transcendental, unlimited person that has unlimited power. But how about this? How about that example about the food? Comparing that to performance of bhakti, what's that in the negative? What's the statement of that in the negative?
If you do things haphazardly and reluctantly, it's all this sort of dust.
Okay, that's a reasonable way to say it. What were you thinking?
If I had just eaten and half an hour later, something shows up with something that I really like, but I force myself to eat it, the experience isn't resolved. So likewise, when there is no love for the Lord, and I force myself to eat, to chant, to do puja, the experience is really dull.
That reason why I wanted to state in the negative is that when we do things in Krishna consciousness, don't feel the ecstasy that is advertised in a sense. Oh, here's the reason. Because there's no love in the offering. It's mechanical at best. But if there's a little bit, and this is the nature of the process of bhakti, if there's the slightest bit of the seed of love, even what to speak of the fully blossomed fruit and flower of love, then there's some taste, a sweetness that's not of this world. There's a sweetness that just can't be duplicated in this world. But you dress the deities, you dress Radha Samasunda, you dress Kornatai, you dress Kiriraj Govardhan, and there's some happiness that comes on a different level. And on the other hand, if you dress your Barbie doll or yourself or whatever, or a mannequin in a window, it doesn't give you that taste, which is just very different. Or if you chant, if there's a kirtan going on and you chant Krishna's names, and then you can chant. I remember when I was in university, they used to say, you're supposed to meditate on a candle. You take a candle and you meditate it on, you can chant candle, 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 candle. Pepsi Cola, Coca Cola, Pepsi Cola, Coca Cola, Pepsi, Pepsi Cola, Cola. I mean, it just doesn't, it's not very much in it. How long could you keep on doing that? 16 rounds of Pepsi Cola or Billabong? Billabong. It does have a ring to it, though, but it's not quite a transcendental ring. So that taste brings, when it's cultivated, it brings some eagerness. I want more of it. Even though I have so many other desires, maybe, but there's something different about that taste, and I want more of it. So the next verse describes that point. Krishna, and this is a very, Prabhupada got the term Krishna consciousness from this verse. Krishna bhakti rasita bhavatomiti. He said that he, when he translated Krishna bhakti rasita, rasa bhavitomiti, he translated that term into Krishna consciousness. And what it means is the sweet taste of awakened relationship with Krishna. So when we hear Krishna consciousness, in our minds we can expand it to that, the awakened soul's, the sweet taste of the awakened soul that he experiences in his relationship with Krishna. That special fragrance, that taste, that's what Krishna consciousness means. So Krishna bhakti rasa bhavatomati kriyatam jadikuti pilabhyate. Though the mati means in the intelligence, Tatraloyama Bimula Mekalam Janma Koti Sukitahi Nalabite. Pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness, that's Krishna Bhakti Rasubhava Tomahi. It cannot be had. Kriyatam Jadi Kuta Pilabhyate. You cannot get it so easily. Even by pious activities in hundreds and hundreds and thousands of lives, you can't get, you might be able to get so many things. You might be able to get beauty, wealth, intelligence, good birth, but you won't be able to get this, something that's above all experiences of this world. So the sweet taste of one's awakened relationship with Krishna, it's not easy to get. You can't get it by having done so many pious activities in this world. Kriyatam jadi kuto api labhyate. Even if you do so many good things in this world, nothing can equal this. It will give you that taste. How do I get it? Tatraloyam abimulam ekalam. It is available. Indeed, it is available. And what's the cost of that? There's only one, the root cause of it. Mulam ekalam. There's only one root cause of that. It's lolium or greed or intense desire. I want this. I want this. And that entails also, I really don't want that and that and that and that and that, despite all the advertising and despite all the, my mind's thoughts of all the things I'm imagining will make me happy. Only if, only if, only if, only if I had this, and only if this didn't happen to me, only if this, and only that, and only this, and only that, and only this, and only that. This is according to the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. This is what causes us this imagination that if I had this, then that causes our next birth. And the tree of the material world has so many branches, and on these branches there are so many fruits in the entire world, so many unlimited number of things that we can imagine. If only I had done this, only if I didn't choose that, only if I had a better this, only if I had a better that, only if I was taller, only if I was shorter, only if I had straight hair, only if I had blonde hair, only if I had a smaller nose, only if I had a bigger nose, only if I could play harmonium, only if I had the intelligence to be able to learn Sanskrit, only if I was born here, only if this, only, and these things. Oh, is that what you want? These cause our next birth. Because adishtam manasthyam visho pasevade, according to the desires that fill our consciousness at the time of death, that's what brings us to our next birth. And what causes the desires that fill our consciousness at the time of death? It's the desires that we have in our life. We cultivate them. And then at the time of death, it's not like you live a materialistic life and then think that at the end and the last day, I'm going to think about Krishna. Well, it could happen, but it's quite unlikely. What you think about is what your mind goes to in that very uncomfortable time is what you look for in your life. What desires inhabit the mind during life, what we've cultivated, the seeds that we planted and cultivated in our life. And that's what the mind will tend to hold on to. So that's a very sobering thought, because so many things I may do, I think, just innocent playing around. But actually they're quite consequential, meaning they have consequences. So one has to live one's life in a careful way if one really wants to get the result. Of course, ultimately, it's going to be mercy that gets us the result. But still, why won't mercy come to us? Of course, mercy is causeless, but that's what mercy means. But if we show ourselves as serious in wanting this, there'll be a tendency, and responsible, there'll be a tendency for mercy to come to us by Krishna. Oh, this person is really, really trying hard. He's incapable. He's wounded. He's lame, blind, and deaf. But he's really, really seriously trying hard, really trying hard. So let me help him. Naturally, Krishna thinks. So tatra loyam api mulam ekam, that real desire, that focused desire is the cause. And then dhanma koti sukhita na labhyate, one can't get this. One can't get this from hundreds of births of pious activities. But if one sees this opportunity to get this, this loyam, this greed, the thing that enlarges, enhances, inflames our desire, one should immediately take it wherever it is. So here's Prabhupada's translation. Pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness cannot be had even by pure pious activities in hundreds and thousands of lives. It can be attained only by paying one price. That is intense greed to obtain it. I want this. Focus, laser-like consciousness. This is what I want. If it is, that is intense greed to obtain it, if it is available somewhere, if that greed is available somewhere, one must purchase it without delay. When Prabhupada says one must purchase it without delay, it doesn't mean that you don't have any choice. Because usually we'd say you must do it means that you have to do it. But what he means to say, it is in your own interest to purchase it without delay. You must do it if you're interested in your own welfare. So here is Prabhupada's purport. The previous two verses are included in the Padavali, a compilation of verses by Srila Rupa Goswami. An anthology compiled by Srila Rupa Goswami. Verse 69, that means the previous verse about the hunger and thirst, refers to devotional service and faith. And verse 70 refers to devotional service rendered out of intense greed. The first is devotional service rendered in accordance with the regulative principles. You do it because it's supposed to be done. It's the inspiration is coming from outside of you. And the second refers to spontaneous loving service of the Lord without extraneous endeavor, that it's naturally, the desire is springing naturally from you. Henceforward, the basic principle underlying the talks between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy will be spontaneous loving service to the Lord. So this is a division in the conversation between Ramananda Roy and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that up to this point, there was points that were having to do with the structure to gain the soul's natural constitutional position. And then there's the soul acting, and here's the soul acting because it's the way the soul should act to attain love for Krishna. And now it's moving to the next level when he's not doing it because it should be done, it must be done. He's doing it because it's the mood is springing internally from him. From now on, it's going to be spontaneous loving service to the Lord, because again, what's being described is a ladder, which is going to describe the most intimate, what is possible in the intimate relationships between the soul and Krishna. So we're not We may be just at the beginning, at the bottom of the ladder, but it's good to know where the ladder is leading. Otherwise, where will be the impetus to climb it? Because it's not an easy climb. And sometimes it's easy to think, well, this is too hard. Or anyway, there's nothing on top anyway, or you know, anything like the story from the Heap to Padesh or from Aesop's fables about the jackal or the fox who was trying to grab the grapes. You know that story? Yes. Who's who? You know that story.
Is that Aesop's?
Yeah, yeah. It's also in Heap to Padesh, yeah. What, you know it? Say it. Yeah. Does anyone know the story?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. So the fox, the grapes are up here, right? And the fox is jumping and jumping and jumping, and he can't reach it. So he says, those grapes must be sour. Who wants them anyway? So sometimes we have in English, they say, it's just sour grapes, which means that you just, because you can't get it. You can't reach it. You're saying that they're sour, you know, because of your limitation. You say, this isn't even worth trying. It doesn't work, this or that.
Yep.
Is there a Punjabi expression like that? There must be.
That's the same story in Punjabi as
well. Huh?
It's the same story.
Same story. It's because it's Heap to Padesh, probably the Buddhist Jataka tales, it's Aesop's fables. Is there a Gujarati saying like that? Okay. So an example of spontaneous action is the flowing of a rivers into the ocean. Nothing can stop this flow of water. Similarly, when one's dormant Krishna consciousness is awakened, it spontaneously flows to the lotus feet of Krishna without impediment. Whatever will be spoken henceforward by Ramananda Roy based on spontaneous love will be agreeable to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the Lord will ask him more and more about this subject. He wants Ramananda Roy to speak about spontaneous love. It's so attractive, even though, because that's what everyone is longing for. It's not so easy. But that's what life is meant for. Okay. Any questions or comments on this?
Might be more that the word greed is used. That's on the 7 day.
Yeah.
Like longing. You just mentioned the word longing. Desire, wish. Maybe it's in this translation.
No. Because why is greed bad?
Because I have more.
Why is it bad? I mean, obviously, some people can have more. Everyone can't have exactly the same of everything. But why is it bad? Okay, instead of using the word personal, you use the word selfish.
Yeah, selfish.
Yeah, it's selfish. Yeah. So that is meant for someone who's in the material world to avoid, because it will entangle him further in material desires and material activities, and it's unsatiable. So it's speaking that kind of a rule, that avoid greed. It's also there in the Bhagavad Gita. Trivedam Darakshedam Dvaram Shinam, something. That there are three gates leading to hell, lust, anger, and greed. So, but that's meant for someone whose consciousness is material, who's trying to get free from the shackles of material life. So, like, they're lords, basically, because this is going to entangle you, so don't do it. It's going to trap you further, bind you further, shackles. But This is talking about something on a completely different level.
Yeah.
This is talking about not for a conditioned soul, a soul who's trapped in the material world. This is for a person who's developed, who spontaneously has love for Krishna. So love for Krishna should really want that, no matter what. But greed, getting the fruits of this material world, you get that, and you know, I have to guard myself, and you can't have it because I want it, and that's just selfish like this. But this, something of a different quality, of a different caliber, it's meant for Krishna. So something that is not good on the material level can be most excellent on the spiritual level, and this is an example of that. One way to see it differently, if you have love for Krishna and you're greedy for that, you really want that and you don't want anything else, you don't have to compete with anyone in this world, and your having it won't stop anyone else from having it. Rather, the opposite, you want everyone else to have it because it's so wonderful and unlimited. So you're dealing with the unlimited as opposed to the limited. Is that sort of clear?
Yeah. Every negative is a positive.
Yeah, especially magnets everywhere. Yeah. He's talking about magnets. Scientists have no idea why magnets act like magnets. Something as simple as that. What is that force? Consciousness. They don't know what consciousness is. They say that it's made out of just combining chemicals or something, and therefore something becomes conscious. They can't do it. Yes, that's a different something. But we'll stop here. Any other questions? Any comments? Any thoughts about it all? Yes.
So the impersonalist cannot reach to that level of love at all because they don't have an object.
No? Not only if you're an impersonalist, what's your goal? What's an impersonalist goal? To become one. So they don't want to love Krishna, so they want to become one with everything. Or freedom, or moksha, just to end the suffering. So why would they, how can you love in that way? It's just, and they'll worship the deity, but for the purpose of becoming the deity. So that's not real bhakti. Follow me? So there's a saying, the impersonal saying is that you take a ladder and you put it up against the wall. And you use the ladder to climb the wall. And then when you're on the top of the wall, you don't need the ladder anymore, so you kick it away. So that when an impersonalist chants Krishna's names or worships the deity, they're thinking of it like a ladder, a way to get something else. But when a devotee chants, it's the way to get something else, and it's the goal also. Is that? But thank you for asking. Yeah.
What difference is there between a mind and a person? What's a different mood? Is it?
Well, an impersonalist just thinks they prefer. You could say that they say that there is the Supreme Lord, and they think the impersonal is higher, but it's still a spirit. They say that to understand the personality is spiritual realization. But the Mayavadis specifically say that the philosophy started by Sripad Shankaracharya, Advaita philosophy, it's that the absolute truth is impersonal. And Maya is so powerful that when the absolute truth comes to this world, he's under the control of Maya. under the mode of goodness. And when the absolute truth is controlled by Sattva-gun goodness, then he becomes Ishvara, or the avatar, or controller. And they say when the jiva comes to this world, he's covered by passionate ignorance, and he becomes jiva. So they say that the Supreme Lord is covered, and all and bhakti is of the material world, covered by the modes of nature, and the Supreme Lord and all his pastimes and his abode, all these are maya. They're in the realm of the three modes of material nature, the material realm, they're in maya. So therefore they're called mayavadis. And impersonalists aren't offenders like that. They don't say that Krishna's covered by the modes of nature. Slight difference in one sense. Good question. Any other questions? Whatever questions, they're good questions if they're real questions.
Can you explain how Sri Prabhupada derived Krishna consciousness from that place?
As best I can. Bhakti rasa bhavita, Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita. That means, mati means consciousness or intelligence. To be engaged in Krishna bhakti rasa, Krishna bhakti rasa. So when you're engaged in your relationship with Krishna, when you're consciously engaged in your relationship with Krishna, that's called Krishna consciousness. And you're And, is that clear enough for you? Tasting the sweetness of one, of bhakti ras, of one's relationship with Krishna, Krishna bhakti ras, tasting the sweetness of that, and the mati is the when your intelligence or consciousness is absorbed in that. The taste of your relationship with Krishna. Right now, what we're trying to take, get some taste from interactions with the material energy. The spiritual soul is trying to enjoy on the material platform by the power of illusion or maya. Like so many, a billion examples. How it doesn't work is like if you have. Have you ever seen Ambani's house in Bombay? Have you ever seen it
from a distance?
Huh? No. You've seen it from a distance. I'm talking about from a distance. You ever seen it? It's a very, very, Jack Tween has actually seen it, I think. What does it look like?
And it's a big, you mentioned like 25 floors, helicopter on the top. And,
yeah. Jack Tween! Oh, Jack Tween! What does Ambani's house look like? You saw it, right? Yeah, you've seen it.
What?
What does Ambani's house look like? You've seen it too? In Bombay, the house of Ambani, that very...
Looks like a swan. Each floor is different than the one underneath.
Yeah. Because you have to do something different than everyone else because you're the richest.
It's right above the slum. Mm. And it goes on and on with these different shapes, structures. It's very, very ugly. Nothing symmetrical. There's nothing harmonious. There's nothing that would make it a work of art. It's the most ugliest, most wealthy house in the world.
It's $1 billion.
Huh?
It's the most billion. It's $1 billion house.
It's the what?
The first one is $1 million house in the world.
I thought they were making a joke. I looked at something and said this is $1 billion, wealthiest house, something. This thing, and it's got these different layers to it. It looks like a cave with sun. Where is something? Can you get a certain angle? You see it from down below, all the slums.
Yeah. And then, but then think of it in this way. What's inside? It's just a room to sleep in, a room to meet people. Were you inside?
There's 13 car parks inside.
Okay.
Screen powder inside. There's a big hospital inside. There's a sauna that's bigger than.
But ultimately, there's a room to sleep in, there's a kitchen and a bathroom.
Yeah.
So ultimately, well,
is that 50 or 60 of them?
Okay, how many beds can you sleep in at one time? After all, I didn't want to use the other rooms to talk about them.
The alarm won't change bed every 2 minutes.
I mean, you really have to stretch your imagination to try to squeeze more pleasure from a house than a house is capable of giving you pleasure. It's like having, say if you have a dog, and you have a relationship with a dog. So if you think, and the dog is nice, and every time he's like the only one in the house that is happy to see you when you come home. But then you think, oh, a dog gives me this much pleasure. So if I have 50 dogs, I have to get 50 times as much pleasure. This doesn't work like that. If you have a sauna that's this big, or you have a sauna as big as Gopinath Dham, or you have an ice cream parlor, I mean, how?
I think it's
70,000 ice cream tastes. Sometimes it seems a little attractive, but but how many? I mean, you can't. One gives you this much pleasure, but so that's the way. So therefore, we keep shifting what drawing. Yeah. Did you see Brother Sudama's hat?
Yeah.
It's pretty flash, isn't it?
I think it was Nav's hat. So the brush guy's turban and Nav's hat. It's very colorful.
And Nav had a different one, but so
he made that himself. Would you like one? Huh? Oh, yeah, He's a businessman.
He's a person.
He's a business guy. They don't even have one room to.
They
have a temple in that.
The wife is a big devotee of Krishna.
No. Cindy.
Oh, Cindy. Wife is Cindy.
Anyway, we're going to get into all the different characteristics of all the different groups. But, you know, Cindy's are like this and like that, very tight families. They're survivors. Okay. Thank you very much. We shall make it our attempt to continue next week, Krishna willing. He wants to know what's better than spontaneous love. What's the next platform? When the heart is flowing to Krishna. I think Tolstoy had a story about this, something like this. There was one man, and he wanted, they were giving away land. The agreement was as much land as he could walk within 24 hours was his land. So some people sort of walked and took it easy. But this one man, he didn't walk, he ran the whole time. He was running and running and running. Please stop and have the rest of it. No, Tony. Eat. No. He just ran and ran. And he had to get back to the start again. By the end of the 24 hours, he ran. And he ran all the way back and dropped dead. And then all he ended up getting was a 6-foot hole in the ground. That's all he went. Okay.